All right. Good afternoon, everybody. For those of you who are in the Midwest or in the East Coast, and good morning to you folks in California. Thank you, Rachel, for leading us on up to this point. My name is John Paul Ruiz, Director of Professional Development here at the Entrust Group, and welcome to the Savings Incentive Match Plan webinar. The focus of today's webinar is to give you a high-level overview of this, what we call employer-sponsored retirement plan. As a matter of fact, to be specific, this IRA-based employer-sponsored plan, which can be offered by small businesses, those businesses that have less than 100 employees in the preceding year. In other words, it's really intended for a small business. The IRS defines that, again, as an employer with less than 100 employees. Now, this seminar is scheduled to last for about an hour long, so I'll cover the material for the next 45 minutes or so and open up the phone lines for any questions you may have in regards to the material presented. So for the next 45 minutes, please write copious notes so that when we get to that section where we'll open up the phone lines for your questions and answer section, we'll try to answer as best as we can all the questions that come up from this particular webinar. Again, my name is John Paul Ruiz, Director of Professional Development here at the Entrust Group. Now, the agenda for today's course will cover the following topics. Well, again, we'll cover a brief overview of why simple IRAs were created under tax law and what the incentives are for employers to establish this type of plan. We'll also talk about how to establish a simple IRA. We'll also take a look at the eligible employers that are eligible to establish such a plan. We'll take a look at the employee participation requirements, if any. And what I mean by that is that the employer could actually provide certain restrictions before an employee can participate in the plan. Now, keep in mind, these service requirements or employee participation requirements also apply to the employer since they're also considered a participant. So if an employer is going to impose, let's say, a service requirement or a current year compensation requirement in order for them to participate in the plan, well, that applies to them as well. So whatever they impose on the employees applies to them as well. We'll take a look at the levels of contributions that can be made into these particular types of plans. We'll take a look at simple IRA portability. You know, that portability is not a mushroom. I joke about that, but what it is that where can simple IRAs move to and from? And lastly, if an employer no longer wants a simple plan, how do you terminate a simple plan? The reason for that is simple IRA plans are considered by most advisors or retirement plan providers out there as a transition plan. In other words, for small businesses that have never had a retirement plan in the past, this is a good plan to start off getting to understand how the inner workings are of a retirement plan, which eventually, the moment their business gets bigger, in other words, they have more employees and can no longer maintain a simple plan, they can transition themselves into a larger plan, such as a 401k plan. That's why plan termination is essential to understand, so that eventually when an employer decides to terminate the simple plan, that they follow the necessary steps. Now, simple plans were created in 1996 under the Small Business Job Protection Act to provide some sort of retirement plan for small businesses. Again, these businesses are defined as an employer that has less than 100 employees in the preceding year. Now, a lot of employers would venerate towards a 401k plan, but keep in mind, 401k plans are subject to rigorous, what we call non-discrimination tests. Now, think to yourself, how many small employers do you think know how to run those non-discrimination tests? That's why simple plans are an attractive vehicle or attractive retirement plan for small businesses to establish, so that it transitions them from understanding how a retirement plan works before they get into the more complicated, what we call 401k plan. Now, there are two different types of contributions that can be made into a simple plan similar to your 401k plan. One of which is what we call a salary reduction contribution. In other words, a deferral. A deferral means if somebody receives a paycheck and they're eligible to participate in the plan, the employer could approach that individual and says, hey, employee, you're now eligible to participate in this simple IRA plan. Do you want me to pay you in cash, or do you want me to defer that paycheck into the simple IRA program that we currently have at our business? Well, if the employee chooses to defer their salary into a plan, of course, they didn't receive it. Therefore, they're not going to be taxing that portion of whatever they defer into the plan. Now, keep in mind, there are only certain times in the year where the employer could allow a participant to enter into the plan. And that is the first part or January 1st of a typical plan when it's established by an employer. Now, employees, again, may choose to defer a portion of their paycheck, whether it be by percentage or dollar figure. Along with that, given the fact that a simple IRA is not subject to what we call those rigorous non-discrimination tests 401k plans are subject to, the employer is required to make a contribution. In other words, it's a mandatory contribution. It could either be what we call a matching contribution or a non-elective contribution. A matching contribution merely means that if an employee puts in a dollar, well, the employer is going to have to put in a dollar. They can also cap themselves up to a certain percentage of the employee's compensation. And the general rules state that they must match dollar for dollar up to 3% of the individual's compensation. Now, the reason why I say generally they could cap themselves is because that 3%, which is stated under the law, could be reduced at a lower percentage for any two out of a rolling five-year period. So in other words, if an employer is having a hard year and they want to reduce the match, they could actually reduce that 3% dollar-for-dollar matching contribution to a percentage such as 1%, maybe for 1 or 2 years, as long as they don't do more than two of those years in a rolling five-year period. Now, an employer could also choose what we call a non-elective contribution. Another good way to explain a non-elective contribution is just a profit-sharing contribution. Now, keep in mind, a matching contribution is dependent upon whether or not an individual actually defers into the plan. If they don't defer, there's no match. In a non-elective contribution, that employee must receive that contribution the moment they're eligible, regardless of whether or not an employee defers into the plan. So most employers choose the matching contribution to reduce their costs. Now, contributions are made to what we call simple individual retirement accounts, or in other words, simple IRAs or simple IR annuities. Now, in this case, what you're probably reading between the lines is that we have two different things that we're talking about. One is a simple IRA plan that an employer establishes. And also what we call a simple IRA, which is an IRA, an individual account that receives the contribution that an employee, as well as what an employer makes. Now, what are the benefits of setting up a simple plan? Number one, the employer can actually use those contributions that they make as a tax deduction. In other words, one of the biggest incentives that Congress makes for employer-sponsored plans is that the employer can use the contributions that they make as well as what the employee makes as a tax deduction. To give an incentive for small businesses to establish a plan if they've never had a plan before is that the employer is given an incentive via what we call a tax credit. The tax credit is a means of reducing the employer's tax liability for the year. So in other words, as an employer, if they made money for the year, they will be subject to tax. How would you like it if the employer actually can reduce not only their taxable income for the year, but they can also be given an incentive to reduce the amount of tax they will have to pay for the year? The employer tax credit as of right now, as it stands, which, by the way, there's another piece of legislation that was just passed by the House and the Senate is kind of working through the details, called the Secure Act 2.0, is thinking about increasing this, what we call employer's startup tax credit. Here's where it stands right now. The employer can either use the greater of 50% of the startup expenses, which is up to $500, or they can take the lesser of $250 for each eligible rank and file employee, not to exceed $5,000. So in other words, if an employer has 10 rank and file employees, you multiply that by 250, they can reduce their tax liability by $2,500. Another way of looking at that too is that, let's say the employer had $1,000 of expenses to start up the plan, well, then that's where we get the $500 from. The employer would have to run through the numbers with their tax advisor to determine their startup tax credit as long as they have not maintained another retirement plan 3 of the prior years of establishing a simple plan. So in other words, they have to look back 3 years. If they've never had an employer-sponsored plan, well, they can actually avail of this startup tax credit. This tax credit is only available for employers, however, that have at least one rank-and-file employee. If you have entrepreneurs that don't have any rank-and-file employees, in other words, they just employ themselves, their spouse, or other business partners, they don't have a rank-and-file employee, well, they're not eligible for this thing called a startup tax credit. Now, to even give employers a further incentive to set up a simple plan, Congress actually has added another additional $500 tax credit if an employer imposes what we call an eligible contribution arrangement. The acronym for that is EACA. All that means is, let's say you have an employee, you have a rank and file employee, and they're eligible to participate. And of course, the employer is going to ask the employee, do you want to participate in this plan or not? If they don't respond, that gives the employer the go signal to go ahead and deduct a portion of that person's paycheck by virtue of what we call a non-response. That eligible automatic contribution arrangement could start off, let's say, at 3% of an individual's paycheck and could go up as high as 10, which means that contributions are being deducted from an individual's paycheck by virtue of not responding. Congress said if an employer includes an eligible automatic contribution arrangement to their simple plan, well, Congress will give that employer an automatic $500 tax credit by setting up this eligible automatic contribution arrangement in the plan. Now, this tax credit is available for the employer for a period of 3 years, which provides a tremendous tax incentive for the employer to establish some sort of employer-sponsored plan, especially the fact that some states are mandating employers to have some sort of retirement plan, or else they get penalized if they don't have one, or would force them to participate in a state-sponsored retirement plan. A simple plan is a good solution for those employers. Of course, these plans also help attract employees as part of the benefit package that the employer provides. And lastly, again, the owners are also treated as employees and can make contributions on their own account. So in other words, the employer can not only set up the plan, they can also make contributions for themselves and use those as a tax deduction, both as an employer, as well as if they're an employee. Since they're an employee, they can also use that contribution as a means of reducing their taxable income for the year. Now let's talk about how to establish a simple plan. It's fairly easy. The IRS actually provides what we call model documents. The model documents can be downloaded from the internet if you wanted to, or you can go to the Entrust Group as a custodian that offers IRAs. Well, we have what we call a simple IRA plan document. The simple IRA plan document does not receive contributions. The simple IRA plan document establishes that the plan is in existence. It also talks about, well, are there any service requirements for the plan? Are there any compensation requirements for the plan in order for a participant to participate? In other words, it provides the rules surrounding the simple IRA program. Now, this plan document, again, is essential to prove that a plan is in existence. Without a plan document, well, then simple contributions cannot be made. The simple IRA plan document could either be one of two documents. One is what we call a designated financial institution, and then the other one is what we call a non-designated financial institution. The reason why they came up with those two terms is as follows. Imagine if a plan has 50 employees, and wouldn't it be a lot easier for the payroll department that's taking money out of each individual's paychecks to deposit those contributions at a simple IRA at one institution? Or would it be a lot simpler for them to allow for each employee to set up a simple IRA at multiple institutions, and the payroll department is gonna have to seek out each one of those simple IRAs to make those contributions on a payroll by payroll basis? Meaning, let's say if an employer has 26 pay periods in a year, the accounting department is going, or the payroll department is going to have to look for those IRAs 26 times during the year. Well, obviously, in this particular arrangement, one institution where all contributions are going to be made is going to be much simpler. Therefore, that document that employer would need to complete is what we call a designated financial institution document. A designated financial institution document means that all simple IRAs must be established at one institution where all contributions are going to be made initially. Now, keep in mind, the employee can always transfer the contributions that have been made to that simple IRA at that particular designated financial institution to another simple IRA of their choosing. Meaning, if they want to avail of a different investment, they could actually transfer their assets someplace else. Whereas a non-designated financial institution, when you make a contribution to that simple IRA, it could be anywhere. Therefore, that financial institution could actually restrict that employee from transferring the contributions that have been made to that simple IRA. Let's say they can only do it once a quarter or once every 6 months. In other words, non-designated financial institutions are typically not chosen by employers that have multiple employees. Now, I think, again, you could see that there's a practical aspect of why we have a designated financial institution and a non-designated financial institution. Now, whether or not an employee would want to defer into the plan will be incentivized by either, again, what we call a matching contribution or a non-elective contribution. Therefore, knowing what the employer is going to choose to make as a contribution before the beginning of the plan year will determine whether or not an employee would want to participate via what we call a deferral contribution or not. Therefore, the IRS, the Treasury Department, requires that employers notify employees 60 days in advance of the start date of the plan. Now, for an existing plan, it would be 60 days prior to January 1st. That puts that date to be November 1st. However, if it's a brand new plan, the employer would need to backtrack on when they would like to start the plan. For example, if you wanted to start the plan September 1st, as an example, well, they need to backtrack 60 days from there to allow for an employee to have 60 days to determine or decide whether or not they want to participate in the plan. Again, if the employer is choosing a matching contribution to deferrals, well, they're not going to get a matching contribution unless they defer. Well, that would be an incentive for them to know that ahead of time. On the contrary to that, if an employer decides that they would like to make a non-elective contribution, well, of course, that tells the employee that they don't have to defer in order for them to receive that non-elective contribution. As you can see, whatever's in that particular notice will help the employee decide whether or not they want to contribute to the plan. Now, keep in mind, there's a lot of employers out there as well that do not have employees. So therefore, even though this 60-day notice requirement still applies, it may not be, you know, adhered to as, you know, stringent as employers that have actual rank and file employees. The simple IRA will be established also for each individual employee. In other words, the employee could either establish the simple IRA themselves, or if an employee refuses or didn't have time to set up a simple IRA on their behalf, the employer can actually establish that simple IRA on behalf of that employee. Because keep in mind, if an employer has to make a contribution and if the employee has not set up a simple IRA, well, who's going to set up a simple IRA? Well, the Treasury Department says the employer could set up that simple IRA on behalf of that employee. And only when that employee claims that simple IRA, in other words, the simple IRA that has received a contribution, will the necessary information from that employee need to be verified by the custodian where the simple IRA has been established. Now, keep in mind, I'm giving a whole lot of information right now. Please jot any questions you may have down so that we can answer it when we get to the question and answer section. Here are the two different documents that the IRS provides for free to establish a simple plan. Or, again, you can go to a custodian that offers simple IRAs, such as the M-Trust Group, to establish that simple IRA plan. The 5305 Simple is what we call the designated financial institution document. Again, that's the document that requires all simple IRAs to be established at one institution to receive each contribution that's being made to a simple plan. Now, the 5304 Simple is what we call a non-designated financial institution, common for mom-and-pop shops that have only a handful of employees. In other words, each individual family member, as an example, is allowed to choose the simple IRA that they choose to receive contributions, and it's not required for all simple IRAs to be established at one institution. That, again, is what we call the non-designated financial institution document, called the 5304 Simple. Now, for simple plan documents, if you go to the interest group, as an example, we are a custodial account provider. So therefore, we would have each employee complete what we call a 5305 SA, or the employer could actually sign that document on behalf of an employee that may not have a simple IRA established at the time of contribution. Some organizations also establish what we call a prototype document. That prototype document is a fancy-smancy document that they created and customized on behalf of each individual simple IRA holder that would like to establish a simple plan, a simple IRA at their institution. At the interest group, we use what we call the 5305 FA as the custodial account document to establish a simple IRA that will receive the contribution on behalf of the employee. Each notice, again, must be provided no earlier than 60 days prior to the beginning of the plan year. It provides the employee an opportunity to make or change a deferral decision. In other words, if the employer says, you're eligible to participate in this plan, how much do you want to contribute? It's either a percentage or a dollar figure. This notice will also provide to the employer where deposits are going to be made. If interest was the financial institution that the employer decides to be the designated financial institution, well, then that notice should include that the simple IRAs must be established at the interest group so that when the employer takes money out of each individual's paycheck, that those contributions will go into the simple IRA that they've established or the employer, what the employer established at the interest group, as an example. It should also provide the type of contribution an employer is choosing to make for the particular year. It could either be a matching contribution again, or a non-elective contribution, or a profit-sharing contribution. It should also provide the way to communicate or connect with the interest group. In other words, the contact information so that if an employee decides to transfer their assets out of that simple IRA, they'll know how to get a hold of the interest group. And last but not least, a written notice in the notice itself that says, you know what, even though contributions are being made to one financial institution, you have the option to transfer those dollars out at any time. In other words, they're not locked in to that financial institution where the contribution was actually made, just in case they wanted to avail of a different investment, as an example. This is an example of the model IRS notification. It's actually made available through the IRS website. This model IRS notification, again, it provides the employer's contribution. It also provides the plan name, so on and so forth, to the employee. The model salary reduction agreement, as I mentioned earlier, is a means of the employer capturing the wishes or the desires of an employee. I choose to contribute a certain percentage or a certain dollar amount to the plan. And this contribution must be begin as of a certain date. So also the employer can also provide that when salary reduction contributions are going to be made into the plan. And lastly, of course, wouldn't it be nice if the employee actually signs an affidavit that that's the amount that they choose to put into the simple program? That's why there's a signature line for the employee to sign this particular notice. The day to establish a simple plan, all simple plans, by the way, operate on a calendar year basis, January 1st to December 31st. There's no such thing as an off-kilter fiscal plan year for a simple plan. It always operates on January 1st to December 31st. Now, to establish a plan, the plan must be established for an existing employer already. In other words, an existing business. No later than October 1st of that particular year. Let me explain why that is. Given the fact that simple IRA programs have what we call a deferral type of contribution, in other words, money being taken out of a person's paycheck, wouldn't it be a dirty trick if an employer says, well, let me make my plan effective December 31st? And the reason why it's a dirty trick is because how are you going to defer dollars or your paycheck when you've already received the paycheck? In other words, an employer must establish the plan to allow for the employees to actually defer a portion of their paycheck into the plan. So therefore, the IRS says, all brand new simple plans must not have a plan year shorter than 3 months. In other words, the plan cannot have a short plan year less than 3 months. In other words, you have to allow for your employees to defer to the plan for at least a period of 3 months. Therefore, the document must be signed not only by the employer, but also the custodian that's going to be receiving those simple IRA contributions no later than October 1st of that particular calendar year. However, what if it was a brand new employer? A brand new employer, let's say, that established their new business on November 1st. They can still have a simple plan. The IRS just says, set up the plan as soon as administratively feasible. Now, you're probably asking yourself, self, what does as soon as administratively feasible mean? Well, the IRS, the IRS said, just as soon as you can. As soon as you are able to set up the plan, set it up as soon as you can. Now, I have no technical definition of as soon as administratively feasible, but that's what the IRS says. Again, for existing businesses that are already in operation, they must establish a simple plan no later than October 1st of that particular calendar year. However, if it's a brand new business, IRS says just as soon as you can establish one, do it, even though it's after October 1st. But again, that only applies for new businesses. An employer also cannot have another plan that they're maintaining in the same year that they're establishing a simple. So in other words, they can't have a 401k plan and a simple in the same year. They also cannot have what we call a SEP plan and a simple plan in that same year. Now, what type of employers can establish a simple plan? Here's a list. Sole proprietors, partnerships, corporations, even tax-exempt entities, state and local governments also can establish a simple plan, even though they're not eligible to establish a 401k plan, they are eligible to establish a simple plan. And last but not least, control group rules do apply. What is a control group? Uncle Sam says, if an entrepreneur of a business owns more than one business and they not only own it, owning meaning at least 80% of the ownership, whether it be as an individual or collectively with multiple owners, own multiple businesses together of at least 80%, and at least collectively the ownership meets at least 50% or more, it means that they have effective control, then all the businesses that are covered by those individuals that have, you know, a common ownership of those companies, if you own it and control it, all employees under those businesses must be covered by the same simple plan. Let me give you an example. Let's say I own a gasoline station and I also own a laundromat. If I own both companies, Uncle Sam says, you cannot give a disproportionate benefit to one company over another. So therefore, the simple plan has to cover all employees that you have, both at the gasoline station as well as the laundromat. In other words, that's just a simplistic explanation or overview of what a control group rule means. That's under Section 414 of the Internal Revenue Code. I kind of just went nerdy on you for a little bit there. Now, not all employers can establish simple plan. You have to be defined as a small employer. A small employer definition, according to the IRS, is that the employer must have no more than 100 employees who earn $5,000 or more in compensation during the preceding calendar year. In other words, it's really designed for small businesses. The moment an employer exceeds that 100 employee limitation, it's not the end of the world. The IRS says you can still maintain that simple plan for an additional 2 years. However, if your employee count maintains that number in excess of 100, then you're going to have to transition to another plan. In other words, it will give you 2 years to transition to, let's say, a 401k plan, as an example. Now, this 100 employee limit may restrict certain employers from establishing a simple plan. However, there's a lot of employers right now that may have over 100, but if they decide to lay off a big group of people, they can transition from what we call a 401k plan to a simple plan. Why is that? Because in a simple plan, there are less costs that an employer would need to fork out of pocket to maintain that plan. Whereas in a 401k plan, the average cost of a 401k plan would less than 50 lives. is around $3,500 to $4,000 a year. In a simple plan, there's really not a whole lot of out-of-pocket costs for the employer. The contributions are a lot lower, but keep in mind, again, if the deferrals from employees are not exceeding the simple plan limits, well, then you might as well just have a simple plan instead of a 401k plan. That's one thing to consider as employers chat with you in regards to whether or not they can move transition from a 401k plan to a simple plan and vice versa, by the way. As I mentioned earlier, an employer cannot maintain two different plans in the same year. And those types of plans include your 401A or qualified retirement plan, such as your 401K plan, a 403B, a governmental 457B plan, a SEP plan, or even a plan described in Section 501C18, which are union plans, or another simple plan for the matter. There's no point in having two simple IRA plans. One plan should cover all employees in a particular calendar year. The only type of plans which that can be maintained are plans that cover what we call statutory employees, meaning union employees covered by what we call a collective bargaining plan. In other words, let's say you have a grocery store that has the home office people, and then all the employees are union. If those union employees have already negotiated another type of plan for those union employees, well, the home office people could still maintain a simple plan and exclude those union employees. For all intents and purposes, the exclusive plan rule just means that an employer cannot maintain two different plans in the same year that they're maintaining a simple plan. Employer income considerations. How does an employer determine how much they can contribute to a simple plan? Of course, W-2 is the safe harbor definition of compensation that can be used to determine whether or not they can make a contribution. What if you have a sole proprietor? In other words, there's only one person, has a small business. The Schedule C, the net business income from their Schedule C and Schedule F, will determine whether or not they're eligible to contribute to a simple plan. For partnerships, it's line 14 of the IRS Form 1065 K-1 for partnerships is what they could use. But for corporations, only W-2 wage can be used to make a contribution. So in other words, let's say you have a shareholder of an S-Corp and they don't receive a W-2 wage because they declare everything under a K-1 of an individual's tax return. Well, there's no point for them to establish a simple plan because they can't contribute if they don't have a W-2 wage. Now for LLCs are just basically either a sole proprietor or a partnership or a corporation. In other words, if the LLC is only one person, they're looked at as a sole proprietor. If there's two people, they're looked at as a partnership. And last but not least, only LLCs that apply for a special entity tax designation as a corporation, will they be taxed as a corporation? So it follows the same train of thought. Sole proprietor, partnerships, and corporations. Now, when are the employer contributions due when they have to make that matching contribution or non-elective contribution? Well, the contribution must be made by the employer's tax return due date plus extensions. In other words, if they're a sole proprietor or corporation, that would generally be due by April 15th, unless, of course, April 15th falls on a weekend or a holiday. For tax year 2022, it'll be April 18th of 2023. Now, if they physically filed for an extension, it buys them a little time to make that employer contribution. They're automatically given a six-month extension if they physically filed for an extension, which puts it at October 15th of 2023. And if October 15th falls on a weekend or a holiday, again, they get the following business day. For partnerships and S-corporations, it's March 15th, with an automatic six-month extension, which puts them to September 15th, if they physically, again, filed for an extension to file their tax return. Now, which employees can participate in a simple plan? Well, the employer can or doesn't have to impose what we call eligibility requirements. The eligibility requirements for employees could be as far as 2 years. In other words, in order for an employee to participate in the plan, they must have worked for an employer at least for 2 years. In other words, if somebody worked for you for an hour 2 years, 10 years ago, that counts for 1 year. And then again, I mean, so there's some tracking that an employer would have to do to make sure that they keep track of when and who this employee is, so that they, if they are having a simple plan, that they're not shorting a particular employee from being able to participate in a plan. Now, keep in mind, there are some employees that are called seasonal employees. What if an employer wants to exclude seasonal employees? Well, an employer could also impose a current year compensation limit in order for that employee, even though they're eligible, to participate in the plan. In other words, the employer could say, you know what, if you don't make more than $5,000 for the year, well, guess what? Even though you're eligible to participate in the plan because you've already satisfied the service requirement, you still cannot participate, right? Now, again, this requirement can be reduced or eliminated. One thing that you may have noticed, however, is that there is no age requirement on a simple plan, and that is correct. You cannot impose an age limit on a simple plan. Again, employees that are union employees covered by a collectively bargained plan can automatically be excluded, as well as non-resident aliens who have no U.S. earned income. So in other words, in a nutshell, to keep it simple, the IRS just says, you know what, the only thing you need to track is how many years has an employee worked for you, as well as if you want to impose a current year compensation, you could do so to prevent an individual from participating in a plan. The maximum contributions to a simple plan for tax year 2022 is $14,000. In other words, if an individual, let's say, makes $25,000 for the year, they can defer up to $14,000 of their paycheck for the particular year. An employer, if they chose a matching contribution, must match dollar for dollar up to 3%, unless, of course, they decided to reduce that 3% to a lower percentage, but can never reduce it to of an immediate 5 preceding year period. If a person is age 50 and older, they can also make an additional catch-up contribution of $3,000. So in other words, if a person is 50 or older, they can actually defer up to $17,000 of their paycheck. And of course, the employer is going to have to match dollar for dollar up to 3% of that individual's paycheck. Another type of contribution an employer could choose again is what we call a non-elective contribution or a profit-sharing contribution. And that percentage is 2%. If an individual, let's say, makes, again, you know, $10,000, and then, you know, the employer chose the non-elective contribution, they have to contribute to all eligible employees 2% of their compensation. And in this case, in my example, it'd be 2% of $10,000. Now, only income for earned income can be used to make a contribution. Again, for a sole proprietor, that would be the Schedule C, as you see on your screen. I hope you're seeing that on your screen. And if it's a partnership, it'll be Schedule K-1. Part 14, by the way, is where they would need to take a look at on Schedule K-1 to determine whether or not they have earned income for the year. And lastly, of course, if it's a corporation, they would have to use the W-2 income. They cannot defer more than their wages for the year. So in other words, you cannot defer that if they say that somebody's making $25,000 a year, you can't defer more than $25,000 a year. You can only defer up to the amount of your wage. But remember, deferrals are subject to FICA and FUTA. In other words, if a person makes $25,000 for the year, they still can't defer the full $25,000 because that amount is going to be subject to what we call FICA and FUTA, which is the Social Security tax that individuals pay. So therefore, it's going to be an amount lower than that FICA and FUTA. The best thing to do is that if an employer does not know how to deal with their compensation, is to refer them to a competent tax advisor to determine their compensation for contribution purposes. Now, when somebody's paycheck is being debited or an amount has been taken out of their paycheck, how quickly does that amount need to be deposited in a particular person's simple IRA? The safe harbor rule for plans, let's just focus on the safe harbor rule, says that the amount taken out of a person's paycheck must be deposited within 7 business days from the date in which that amount was taken out of a person's paycheck. In other words, the employer cannot just hang on to that amount. It must be deposited into that individual's simple IRA within 7 business days. The matching contribution, again, is dollar for dollar, up to 3% of compensation. In other words, the employer would say, I'll match you dollar for dollar, but I won't go any further than 3%. It is also capped by the amount of the deferrals. In other words, let's say if an individual only defers $200, even though 3% of an individual's compensation may be higher than that, you're only matching up to the amount of the deferrals that employee contributes. The matching contribution, again, can be lowered to a percentage lower, in this case, as an example, up to 1%, but never more out of 2 years out of a rolling 5-year period. Again, no contribution is made to those individuals who do not defer into the plan. I see a lot of employers out there, for example, I don't know if you've ever been to a doctor. There may be 5 doctors in an office, and there's one person, Elsa, who's basically taking on all the scheduling. Well, guess who makes the least amount of money in that doctor's office? Probably Elsa. Elsa may not even defer into the plan because Elsa can't afford it. So therefore, the doctors don't have to make any contribution on behalf of Elsa, because there's nothing to match if Elsa does not defer into the plan. And again, an employer may also include what we call an eligible automatic contribution arrangement that would automatically debit a person's paycheck if they're eligible, if the employee does not respond to the employer of their offer to participate into the plan. But if they do respond, well, then they don't have to take out that portion of a person's paycheck. Now, we're reaching towards the end of the seminar. Let's talk about portability. What can you do with a simple IRA? Where can you move it to? Well, you can move it to another simple IRA at any time. However, if you wanted to move it to a traditional IRA, in other words, you want to consolidate assets and put it in one IRA, well, you can only roll over or transfer a simple IRA to a traditional IRA or even a 401k plan after what we call a 2-year rule has been satisfied, which means from the initial date of contribution, after 2 years, that simple IRA takes on the characteristics of a traditional IRA. So therefore, whatever you can do with a traditional IRA, you can do with a simple IRA. You can move a simple IRA to a traditional IRA after 2 years. You can convert a simple IRA to a Roth IRA after 2 years. And lastly, you can even roll over a simple IRA to a 401k plan, a 403b, or a governmental 457b plan after the 2-year rule has been satisfied. Now, when it comes to simple plans, if a plan is not operated properly, because keep in mind, a lot of these plans are what we call small business plans. In other words, they're operated by mom and pop shops or small businesses that do not have, let's say, have an HR department. Well, it's not the end of the world. The IRS has devised what we call a correction program called the Employee Plans Compliance Resolution System, which basically allows for employers to say, hey, I messed up, IRS, I'm fessing up. In other words, mess up. If you mess up, you fess up. Well, guess what? You can correct your errors and you will not fall into an issue. However, if an employer, let's say, does not pay close attention to running their plan and they get into an audit, well, then they get into what we call the audit closing agreement program, which is not where employers want to be. However, in this particular seminar, I just wanted to let you know that we don't live in a perfect world. If there are employers that mess up, well, there's a way to fix some of those common errors. And by the way, the IRS actually even provides what we call a simple fix-it chart that can be provided to an employer if they mess up, provided to their competent tax or legal advisor, correct the issue, voila. And then that issue would no longer haunt them in the future. The IRS also has what we call a simple plan checklist. A simple plan checklist basically guides an employer in regards to what they're supposed to do when they've established a simple plan to help them not run into a foul by not running their simple program appropriately. Last but not least in this particular seminar, if an employer no longer wants to have a simple plan, how do they terminate a simple plan? Obviously, if they're not going to have a simple plan in the next plan year, they have to notify all the participants that they're no longer going to be maintaining that simple plan. In some cases, they may say, in 60 days from now, we're no longer going to have a simple plan, but we have established what we call a 401k plan as an example. That's a good transition from one plan to another. Or in some cases, the employer may say, you know what, I'm not going to have a simple plan anymore. So as of, 60 days from now, that don't expect that we will have an employer-sponsored plan any longer. That's what we call a plan termination. Now, what if an employer says, you know what, I'm having a hard time running my, income is not coming in. Can I terminate a plan mid-year? The answer would be, you cannot. Because keep in mind, 60 days prior to the beginning of the plan year, the employer made a promise that contributions are going to be either matched or a non-elective contribution will be provided. So therefore, mid-year plan terminations are not allowed. And lastly, if a plan terminates, there's no IRS or Department of Labor reporting. So it's a lot more simpler to administer than your stereotypical 401k plan for for-profit entities. Well, this concludes the presentation portion of our webinar. Now I'd like to open up the phones for any questions you may have in regards to the material presented. Rachel, if there are any questions, please read any questions that people may have and let's answer those questions.
Yes, everyone, please type your questions into the chat box and we'll wait here just a moment. Okay, so similar to a 401k plan where the employer chooses certain stocks that the employees can invest in, what is chosen for simple IRAs?
That's a good question. Unlike 401k plans where the employer has the fiduciary obligation to determine the types of investments that are placed under the investment selections under a 401k plan, a simple IRA is left more to the employee. That's why there's less fiduciary obligation for an employer. So in other words, if an employee would want to choose to invest in, let's say, a piece of real estate or precious metals, they are not restricted by what the employer allows or not allows under the plan. That's the beautiful part about a simple IRA. As an example, let's say the simple IRA is established at, let's say, at a broker dealer, where they have stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. And an employee says, well, I don't want to invest in stocks, bonds, and mutual funds anymore. Since it is an IRA, that simple IRA can be transferred or moved to another provider, such as the Entrust Group as an example, to avail of the different investment that they have chosen. In other words, unlike a 401k plan where they are restricted, in a simple IRA, they're not restricted. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, JP. And then it looks like another question. So yeah. Can an employee transfer in money from a traditional IRA into a simple IRA to also combine the plans, even if it's before the 2 year?
Sure, that's a good question. I'm going to repeat the question. Can a traditional IRA be moved to a simple IRA? The answer is yes. You can move a traditional IRA to a simple IRA as long as the simple IRA has satisfied the 2 year rule. Meaning from the initial date of contribution to that simple IRA, from the initial contribution 2 years has passed, the traditional IRA can be moved to a simple IRA. Now keep in mind, there are additional things that you may want to note about a simple IRA. A simple IRA, given the fact that it is an employer-sponsored plan, an employer contribution, under the Bankruptcy Protection Act of 2005, simple IRAs, SEP IRAs, 401k plans, employer-sponsored plans in general, have an unlimited coverage for bankruptcy protection. So in other words, if a person applies for bankruptcy, in other words, as an example, the owner of a simple plan, in other words, they're a small business, they apply for bankruptcy, simple assets are not, there's no limit on how much they can exclude from their bankruptcy estate. Whereas traditional IRAs and Roth IRAs combined are only limited to 1 million. Now keep in mind, by moving traditional IRA assets into a simple IRA, the simple IRA assets may have lost that unlimited exemption for bankruptcy purposes if they combine the two together. and vice versa, simple IRA moving to a traditional IRA. So that's the only caution that I have in combining the two particular IRAs together, is for bankruptcy protection, just in case that's something that you want to avail of in the future. I hope that makes sense to you folks.
Yes, thank you. And it looks like the last one is, besides the three-year rule of not having another retirement plan, are there any other rules about around getting simple
IRA credit?
Mm-hmm.
The tax credit, again, stipulates the fact that an employer must have at least one rank and file employee in order for them to avail of the tax credit. Again, if it's only covering themselves and the employer, when I say themselves, the employer, and let's say their spouse or another owner, and they don't have a rank and file employee, that tax credit is not allowed. So in other words, it's really incentivizing those employers with employees to establish a small business retirement plan. I wish that they didn't have that stipulation, because there's over 26 million partnerships and sole proprietorship filings in the United States of America, and a lot of those people do not have employees. So therefore, even though you have a tax credit benefit by establishing a small business retirement plan, a lot of employers cannot avail of it because they don't have a rank and file employee. So that's the only stipulation that mucks things up for a lot of employers.
Awesome. Thank you, JP. That was all of the questions.
Well, all right. Let's summarize what we covered today. Simple IRA plans are small employers with less than 100 employees. Simple plans, again, always operate on a calendar year basis, January 1st to December 31st. Two contributions may be made to a simple IRA: employee deferrals and employer contributions. The two-year rule must be satisfied before simple IRAs can be transferred to a traditional IRA. Simple plans must also be maintained for the entire year and that may not be terminated mid-year. I'm just going to do a little bit of a plug here. Since you folks are interested in simple plans, the Interest Group does have a school. It's called our IRA Academy, and we hold it live in Nashville, Tennessee, on the week of September 12th to the 15th. This school is approved by the American Bankers Association for what we call the Certified IRA Services Professional Designation, an accredited designation that is used by broker-dealers, banks, credit unions, RIAs, even enrolled agents from the IRS for continuing education credits, as well as certified financial planners and CPAs. If you're interested in attending that particular course, we are having one in Nashville, Tennessee, the week of September 12th through the 15th. We have also launched what we call our Interest Academy, and you can find more information about that on our Interest website, www.theinterestgroup.com. It's included in the umbrella of the Interest Academy are online courses that you could actually take to increase your knowledge in regards to retirement plans, especially if you're in this space. We also have the IRA Academy On Demand, which is a video-based as well as visual. There's manuals, there's pronouncements, there's in a video teaching guide that walks you through each one of the particular courses. With that in mind, my name is John Paul Ruiz, Director of Professional Development here at the Interest Group. Rachel, I thank you for inviting me today to present. If you want to learn more about some of our educational products, please contact Rachel, and she can direct you to the right place. I'm going to hand it over to you, Rachel, and wrap up the training today.
Awesome. Thank you very much again for your time today. Thank you, everyone who attended. As John Paul Ruiz has said, please feel free to reach out to us with any questions. We're always here to help. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Have a great day.